Hi M&Ms, welcome back to another episode of Murder and More. As always, I am your host, Kira. Halloween dates back over 2,000 years to the ancient Celtic festival of Samhain. November 1st, the Celtic New Year, marked the end of summer and harvest, and the beginning of a long, cold, dark winter for Celts, who inhabited areas that are now known as Ireland, the UK, and northern France. This time of year in particular was associated with human death, and Celts believed that on the night before New Year, the boundaries between the worlds of the living and the dead became murky and blurred. On the evening of October 31st, Celts and Druids would celebrate Samhain, where it was believed that the ghosts of the deceased returned to Earth by building large bonfires where people gathered to burn crops and animals as a sacrifice to the Celtic deities. The Celts wore costumes, such as animal heads and skins. They attempted to tell each other's fortunes, and when the celebrations were over, the fires were relit to protect them during winter. Catherine Lillian Armstrong was a 70-year-old devout Methodist in 1963. Catherine, who lived in Sandyford, Newcastle, was a retired headmistress, a regular churchgoer, and had sung with the choir at the Central Methodist Church for 40 years. Catherine was known as a spinster, having never married and having lived alone all her life in Doncaster House, a fairly large property which sits on the corner of Goldsmink Lane, a narrow residential road with on-street parking and graffitied walls nearby. At 10:50 a.m. on November 1st, 1963, Catherine was found battered to death in her home by a police sergeant after her cousin, Ada Ridley, had visited the house at 10:30 a.m. to find the curtains drawn and no answer to her repeated knocks on the door, despite Catherine being a habitual early riser. Catherine's lifeless body, which lay at the bottom of the stairs, was dressed in a dress and slippers, had a nylon stocking tied round the neck, and bore defensive wounds on her hands, suggesting she had fought for her life. It was later revealed at autopsy that Catherine had been battered and stabbed in the face and head 28 times, and that shock and severe blood loss was her cause of death. A murder inquiry began immediately, with all leave being denied for Newcastle's police force and officers who were already on leave being asked to return to work. Within just hours of the discovery of Catherine's body, Newcastle police requested help from Scotland Yard detectives, and Detective Superintendent Eric Reed of Scotland Yard's murder squad travelled to Newcastle that evening to assist in the investigation, which began by piecing together Catherine's last hours alive. Two children came forward to say that they had been passing Doncaster House and had seen Catherine looking out of her window the previous afternoon at about 6:30 p.m. and police knew that Catherine was due to attend choir practice an hour later, as she did every Thursday evening, however failed to show. Apart from a possible hour window in which the murder could have taken place, police didn't have much else to work with. Detective Superintendent Eric Reed noticed a lack of forced entry, which could have suggested Catherine knew her killer. There was no sign of motive, no sexual assault, nothing stolen, and the murder weapon, believed to be a long-bladed item, was nowhere to be found. Whilst officers searched drains, gardens, parks, bins and streams for the murder weapon, Catherine's cousin, Ada, speculated that the murder could have been committed by teenagers, taking a Halloween prank too far. Quote, "My cousin's home was big, dark and gloomy. It got no sun. Time and time again, I told her she should leave and take a flat near me. but she was very independent and said she was not at all afraid of living alone. End quote. While police looked into the possibility of teenagers being responsible for Catherine's murder, they were also looking at files of men who had been recently released from prison for crimes related to violence against women. 3 days after Catherine's body was discovered, 200 statements had been taken, and extra police were brought in to investigate her murder and locate the murder weapon. Police revealed that they planned to question more than 5,000 people, which would have made it the largest house-to-house inquiry Newcastle had ever seen. Detectives knocked on doors within a half-mile radius of the murder scene, and by January 1964, 16,000 people had been interviewed. However, despite this, no one had any information for police. Despite a team of 50 detectives working 18-hour days to identify Catherine's killer, at the inquest held in January 1964, they revealed they were no closer to solving the case than they were back in November. Former DCI Nigel Wilkinson believes that if the murder had been committed today, it would have likely been solved. Quote, "If this had happened now, we would have had a lot of new and different lines of inquiry than they had back then. I would definitely say, though, that the greatest chance of solving this case lies in forensics. But in those days, all they had to go on was blood groups. There was no DNA. This was a frenzied attack, so there must have been blood all over the house. But it's possible not all of that blood is the victim's. Miss Armstrong had defence wounds, which is very significant. She clearly put up a fight, and it's a possibility she caused her attacker to bleed. Blood swabs could have been taken. If they had been preserved, you might be able to get the killer's DNA from them now. The problem is, if there is blood scattered all over the place, you can't take samples of every single spot. And back then, they would have had no idea what was coming in terms of forensic science. These days, there would also be a forensic examination of the stockings where the murderer would have held them." End quote. To this day, Catherine Armstrong's murder remains unsolved, and if no one ever comes forward to claim responsibility, it's likely to remain that way. Questions will remain forever surrounding this case. Was her killer someone she knew? Was she killed between 6:30 and 7:30 p.m? Was it a group of teenagers playing a Halloween prank on an elderly woman? Or was it a more personal attack? We will likely never know the answers to these questions. The case I want to tell you about after the break is similar to Catherine's, in that the victim was brutally assaulted, and his murder remains unsolved to this day. There are a few differences between these cases, though. Catherine's occurred in her home. This next case took place in a park. There is also a motive for this murder, and as we know, there is no known motive for Catherine's murder. After the break, I will discuss the unsolved murder of Derek Grain. Since 1998, Stamps.com has been an indispensable tool for nearly 1 million businesses. Stamps.com brings the services of the US Postal Service and UPS shipping right to your computer. Whether you're an office sending invoices, a side hustle Etsy shop, or a full-blown warehouse shipping out orders, Stamps.com will make your life easier. All you need is a computer and standard printer. No special supplies or equipment. Within minutes, you're up and running, printing official postage for any letter, any package, anywhere you want to send. And you'll get exclusive discounts on postage and shipping from USPS and UPS. Once your mail is ready, just schedule a pickup or drop it off. No traffic, no lines. Cut the confusion out of shipping. With Stamps.com's new Rate Advisor tool, you can compare shipping rates and timelines to easily find the best option. Save time and money with Stamps.com There's no risk. And with my promo code, POD, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in POD. That's stamps.com, promo code POD, P-O-D. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. On the morning of Halloween 1980, 24-year-old nurse Sally Isaac was on her way to her job at St. Mary's Hospital. As Sally walked through Brandon Hill, the oldest park in Bristol, which boasts views of the city and harbourside, she discovered the body of a man lying face down in a pool of his own blood. The man was later identified as 39-year-old aerospace contractor Derek Grain, who had moved from Hertfordshire and was staying at the Unicorn Hotel in Bristol. Derek had been in Bristol for just 2 months at the time of his murder and was there on secondment to British Aerospace in Filton, just north of Bristol city centre. Derek, who was described as a mild-mannered man, who was a bit of a loner, but a cheerful and kind person nonetheless, was found to have been battered around the head with a sand-filled traffic cone, which was found discarded about 80 yards from his body, before likely being kicked in the head and chest as he lay there dying from his multiple cuts and skull fractures. The autopsy revealed Derek had been struck from behind, so likely never saw his killer coming, and it's believed that the cone had been picked up from some roadworks taking place near the entrance to the park. Derek's Ford Fiesta was found at the hotel, having not been moved since 4 p.m. the previous day, and detectives were easily able to piece together his last known movements. The night before Derek's body was discovered, on Wednesday the 30th of October, he had been out drinking in Vicky's and Curve's nightclubs, both on nearby Park Lane. It was heavily suggested that Derek liked to drink. However, people who knew him stated that he was certainly not one to cause a scene or get into a fight. At about 2 a.m, Derek left the club and made his way to Brandon Hill Lane. Although police remain unsure as to why he took this route, as Brandon Hill is not on the way to the hotel. In fact, Derek was walking in the opposite direction of the hotel he was staying at, which begs the question, if he wasn't headed back there, where was he going? While detectives didn't have much to work with, they did believe they knew the motive for Derek's murder. Police believed that this was a case of a robbery gone wrong, as Derek's jacket had been torn off, roughly £50 to £60 had been taken from one of the pockets, and his bank cards were scattered around his body. It was noted that Derek was paying in cash that night and brought virtually every drink with a brand new note, causing police to speculate that he had attracted the wrong attention. In an interview given to the Bristol Post, Detective Inspector Brian Theobald, who was leading the investigation, stated, quote, "There is a possibility that more than one person was involved in this. I am having a second examination of the scene, and I'm pretty confident that the assailants were spattered with blood, at the very least. I am pretty satisfied that the motive was robbery. They used an awful lot of violence. It was a particularly vicious, brutal murder." End quote. In the early days of the investigation, police received several tips, none of which led them any closer to identifying Derek's killer. One man told police that he saw 3 or 4 men attacking someone near Clifton Triangle, less than 0.5 mile from Brandon Hill, on the night in question, and reported seeing a red Jaguar in the vicinity. The car was traced, and despite a second individual coming forward to state that the car was registered to someone from Derek's hometown, police tracked down the owner, who was nowhere near Bristol at the time of the murder. Despite a £500 reward being put up for any information that would lead to the identification of Derek's killer, 40 detectives work in the inquiry for many months, and the traffic cone and the insides of his coat pockets being forensically analysed in more recent years, the murder remains unsolved over 40 years later. All police are left with is a footprint on the back of Derek's blood-soaked shirt and many unanswered questions. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a rating and review. To interact with us, you can follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at Murder and More, Instagram at Murder and More Pod, and Facebook at Murder and More Podcast. To view the sources and pictures for this episode, head over to www.murderandmorepodcast.wordpress.com. Have an amazing few weeks, stay safe, and I'll see you all in 2 weeks for another episode.